Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the interesting artistic side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm speaking to you from Reykjavik in midwinter. Maybe the winter is easing off elsewhere in the world, maybe a little, as February comes in, but here in Reykjavik it's windy, it's dark, it's inky black, long nights, perfect times for gaming. And I have been playing lots and lots and lots of different games in the last week. It was the Steam Next Fest, and despite the fact that I only run a Mac and I don't have a Windows machine, I was able to play quite a few, either through a simulated Windows desktop on the Mac or because there are Mac versions of a lot of the games. So I'm going to talk through all of the games that I tried. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different games here. A couple of them were straight up, I wish the demo never ended, I'm buying this the second it comes out, kind of reactions. A couple of them were, I hope that this game is earlier in development than it seems to be because it needs a lot of work. And a couple of them were just kind of obscure picks that I just plucked from the tree just to give them a little try. So I've got a few interesting games, first impressions of things that were in Steam Next Fest that we can look forward to maybe this year. Hopefully this year, most of them. You would think so if they're putting demos out now. I'm also going to review a game that I've been playing. It's one that I've been looking forward to ever since it was first revealed in the middle of last year during the Summer of Jeff, or whatever we call it these days. It is Birth by Madison Carr. It's a game that I've talked about quite a few times on this podcast. I've played through it 1.5 times at this point. I think it's a super intriguing game, and as it is coming out this week, I think I will release this podcast on the day it comes out, which is the 17th of February. I thought it's time to give it a review, so I'll be talking about Birth as well. But before I get on to talking about the games, let me briefly mention this is a patron-supported show. If you happen to be a patron of the show already, then thank you very much for your patronage. I'd like to say a special thank you this week to Eric and David, both of whom upped their pledges. Eric went up from $1 to $3, and David went up from $1 to $5. So thanks very much, guys. That is really helpful of you. I think I'm going to try and put all of my patron money, after the horrible experience I had in the last week trying to play Steam games on a Mac, I think I'm going to try and get a Steam Deck or an entry-level Windows machine to play games on. So I think I'm going to save up all of the patron money from the podcast so that I can talk about more and better and newer games. For example, all the brilliant games that are in Steam Next Fest, there was a whole bunch that I could not play, and I really wish that I could. So I think it's time for me to get a Windows machine. So if you'd like to hear me talking about more Steam games on the podcast, then please do come and chip in at Patreon. I currently get about $80 a month, I think, maybe $70 after Patreon's cut. I usually use it to buy games to review or to buy music for the podcast from Bandcamp and all of that kind of thing. But I am going to start saving now. So it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild if you would like to chip in. And a big thank you to Dave and Eric for upping those pledges. I will put a link in the show notes if the Patreon is something that interests you. You do get an invite to the Discord, where we have great conversations every day about games. We're playing Guess the Game. We're playing Wordle and Quordle these days. We have a channel for Hi-Fi Rush. We have a channel for Pentiment. Loads of different channels for specific games. There was a huge long thread about Chained Echoes recently. And we all just share the videos we're seeing, the new games we're seeing, release date announcements, free game announcements, big sale cuts and things like that. So it really is a really good resource for me. I find out about plenty of games and plenty of sales through the Discord. So if you join the Patreon, that's one of the perks you get, patreon.com/gamingintheWild. And with that said, let's move on to the first game of this Steam Next Fest roundup. I'm going to start off by talking about a game called Radio the Universe. Radio the Universe is a strange little game. It's a top-down Zelda-like in some ways. And whilst Googling it, I found out that this game has actually been in development, or at least there has been a Kickstarter for it, since 2012. It had a small initial Kickstarter goal that it has smashed by now. I think it was after an initial $12,000. It's up to $80,000 right now. So the game is fully funded and then some. It seems that it's been built on over the years. This is a really, really promising game. It was recommended to me in the Steam Next Fest sale by Soccer, a patron of the show, over on the Discord. So thank you, Soccer. And whilst it is a pixel art top-down Zelda-like, it also is more than that. It has, if you've played Signalis, for example, which is another top-down game with pixel art, but features these strange washes of static that will come across the screen, these beautiful cutscenes, pixel art cutscenes, where you get obscure and surreal little messages, and they seem to be memories from the past or glimpses of other places or glimpses of futures. Radio of the Universe has a bit of that going on, so there's lots of visual distortions happening on the screen. The gameplay itself, in the short amount that I played, was pretty simple. It's moving around with the... I was actually using keys because I couldn't get my pad to pair with PC Steam, as per the introduction there about picking up more hardware. So I ended up playing it on WASD keys, which meant that I couldn't get very far. I got about, I would say, 15 minutes into the game, and then suddenly there is quite a hard combat arena, and I couldn't get through it with those dodgy controls. But the bit that I did get through, it was some basic platforming, jumping up things, climbing up things, jumping across obstacles. Then you have a strike and a charge strike. You have a dash, and you have a dodge. And all of that combines into a Zelda-like that feels very familiar, but in a good way. Like, I like those kind of games, especially if there is something more than meets the eye going on. And Radio of the Universe has this beautiful piano music, like we just heard. It has those staticky visions. It has an intro that has got more in common with something like Hyperlight Drifter, like a surreal sci-fi vision of some kind of future. There is clearly a good story happening here, and I can't wait to find out more about it. So Radio of the Universe was one of the games that went straight onto my watch list for the future. The next one that I played was a little bit of less of a good result. It was High Water. This is a game that I have talked about a whole bunch. It is by the Golf Club Wasteland devs. This time it's a 3D game with a low poly graphic style where you are boating around in an inflatable dinghy in a flooded world. And the thing that I liked about Golf Club Wasteland is it has this fantastic radio show that plays in the background as you golf through the ruined earth. High Water starts just the same. It starts with an overhead camera zooming down onto a floating dinghy that is adrift with someone sleeping in it, as the same radio presenter that we heard in Golf Club Wasteland talks about the end of the world. It's a brilliant beginning, and then we're straight into the game. The camera zooms in behind the boat, and then you are controlling this dinghy across a flooded world. You can see lampposts sticking out of the water. You can see buildings sticking out of the water. It seems that alleys have been created for boats to maneuver down between different settlements. All of the settlements are short of food. We meet other people on boats. We meet other people living on these atmospheric little outcroppings of land. We hear about bandits. We hear about a plan to abandon the earth. And your protagonist has decided that he's going to climb onto a ship and leave the earth. This is also a turn-based tactics game, which is something of a surprise to me. And I have to say that the initial impression of playing this one was that this feels like it needs more time in the oven. And I guess it will have that, as it's a demo. I'm quite curious about what stage in production games are considered ready to be put out as demos. Because some of the games that I played in the Steam Next Fest felt basically finished, like I was playing the first part of a finished game. Others felt almost like I was looking at placeholder art, placeholder UI, lots of rough edges, little jank here and there. High Water was one of those. So whilst the idea is there, the aesthetic is there, the soundtrack is there, and the radio show is there, so the atmosphere and the scenario and all of that stuff is there. It didn't feel great to play. Like, if you hit anything in the boat, you know, I drive into things when I start a game just to see what the collision is like. The boat just behaved incredibly jankily and weirdly. The same goes for when you are on foot. When you disembark the boat, there is no animation for getting out of the boat, so you get a little black screen every time you land. Which really takes you out of it. You really want to see an animated character disembarking the boat or something. You need to see something. And the turn-based combat, I did a couple of rounds of it before the game crashed on me. Again, I'm using a bit of a Frankenstein setup, so that's on me. But the UI that you see in the tutorialization of the combat felt a little strange. Like the grid didn't look good, and it made the combat feel weird. Like if enough things, like little alarm bells go off in your mind, like the UI looking strange, the collision being weird, but little bits of judder here and there, and the control scheme not feeling 100%, then this coheres in your mind into thinking, I don't know about this one, you know what I mean? So Highwater quickly reached that threshold of me not being sure about it. I really hope that this one has more time in the oven, that these rough edges get sanded off, that there is like a further art pass on it and all that kind of stuff. Because I really want to enjoy Highwater. I'm ready for it to be good, but I didn't gel with this demo very well. The same can be said of the next game I'm going to talk about. This one is called Mika and the Witch's Mountain. I had never heard of it until this Steam Next Fest, and it was a recommendation from Soccer. Again, well done, Soccer. You've been scouting out the best games here. This one is another 3D, low-poly, open-world-ish kind of game. The concept of this one is that it's a little like Kiki's Delivery Service, the game. If you have played, watched rather, Kiki's Delivery Service, the Studio Ghibli animation, you will know that it's about a young witch who zooms around on her broomstick with a little cute cat, and she's doing jobs for people and doing witchy witch things. In this game, Mika and the Witch's Mountain starts off with Mika ascending the Witch's Mountain. She is a young girl, and she is wanting to become a witch's apprentice, learn how to be a witch. She gets to the top. She meets the witch. She falls from the mountain and lands in a village far below. Her broomstick is broken, and her task is to fix the broom and get back up the mountain when her training can begin. To do this, she realizes she's going to need money to get the broom fixed and then to get progressively better brooms that can fly higher and higher and get her up the mountain. And so she takes work at a local post office. And so you get little missions. You have to pick up a parcel. Sometimes they have conditions, for example, fragile or soluble, can't get wet. I imagine there's going to be time limits and things like that. And then you get a star rating when you complete a delivery, you fly around this little world. And then if you get a green star, you get money. And if you get money, you can upgrade your broomstick. And so it goes. It's a short demo. I only did 3 deliveries and upgraded my broomstick once before the demo shut off and played like a lengthy cartoon of the game. I was quite impressed with it, but there was, again, this one felt like nowhere near the finish line. The art felt a little like placeholdery. There were collision issues again. The movement didn't feel great. You know, the first thing you do in most games, at least if you're me, I've seen other people do this too, is that you turn around and walk in the wrong direction just to see what happens. If you walk out to sea in this game, you get a black screen and then you just appear back on the beach. If you walk behind you, you do this weird wall floating where you're floating against invisible walls, things like that. So that gave me a bad impression of that part of the game, at least. But the central core mechanic is there. The flying is pretty cool. It's quite strange. Like you can't intuitively, when I first got on the broomstick, I tried to maneuver up and fly higher. That's not how this works. You kind of coast along the ground like Starlink, like skimming the ground. And then you can hit one of the shoulder buttons to kind of pop, and you will pop up into the air and then slowly float down to the ground. You can't pop up too high. So it's not really like true flying with vertical controls. You're using this little pop to get up into the air. There are also pop-ups for dialogue with portraits of the characters and that sort of thing. There are little cartoon cutscenes that seem a little out of place, I would say. They're a little too Saturday morning kids cartoon for me. Like the tone and the voicing and so forth is a little, I don't know. I feel like it's not Ghibli. It's not Ghibli, let's put it that way. It's quite shouty and squeaky and definitely seemingly aimed at kids. Maybe that's what I'm talking about, really. Maybe this game is just more aimed at kids than I would have liked. It reminded me a little of Summer of Mara or My Time at Portia, if you know what I mean. Like little cute, vaguely janky, quite fun, colourful indie games. So there is promise in Mika and the Witch's Mountain, but I want to see more of it before I will be buying that one for sure. And the next game I'm going to talk about is one that I just plucked out of the pile completely randomly. I was just scrolling the list. There were 200 plus games. This one was compatible with Mac, and I thought, okay, I'm going to give this one a try. When I run it through the Windows interface on the Mac, I get some extra lag in control inputs. And so getting games that are native to Mac remove that extra obstacle. And this one was also a mouse-based game, which I felt good about given my controller issues. It's called Unmerc. It's a 3D object-based jigsaw puzzle. You see an empty object before you. It has a grid drawn over it, so it's made out of cubes that look like voxels. You can rotate the object by clicking on its edges. You can also free rotate it, kind of, by holding down the mouse button and moving the mouse around. You will see that it is divided into shapes, irregular voxely shapes, so it has lines drawn on the sides. And those shapes change, so if you're looking at it from the horizontal side and it's a flat object, you will see long, thin shapes. If you rotate it to its broad front or back, you will see larger shapes drawn out like jigsaw pieces. You get two pieces dealt to you randomly at the start of a game. You then have to try and turn the object and rotate the object and find where the first piece fits. When you plug it in, it gets a color, so you can start to see colorful edges. For example, if it's a guitar, you will see the wood, and then you will see darker where the hole is and lighter where the fretboard is. And when you look at the pieces that you are then dealt, you will know that it belongs to one of those color areas. Like if it has that light wood and it's long and thin, then you'll know that it belongs on the fretboard and so forth. And it's quite tricky at first to find the first place to put your piece because they are quite complex shape. I would say that a lot of them are like 20 plus voxels with little spindly cubey bits going off and little single or double voxel plug edges. And there'll be like, you know, 50 spaces or something on an object. So you're turning it around looking for that first one. But the more that you plug in, the more you get to recognize the shape of the object and where the next piece might go. And I actually quite got into the zone on this one. I ended up completing 6 or 7 levels in quick succession and really enjoyed my time with it. I think it reminded me of a chill game like Cloud Gardens, which made my Game of the Year list 2 years ago. It's another game like that. It's a time sink concentration game with an ambient soundtrack and just a very meditative, simple activity that you're doing on the screen. So I had a good time with Unmerc. I'll be watching out for that one as well. I'm curious about its price point when it launches. Another wild card was a game called Full Void. This is a pixel art side-scroller with some platforming. It reminds me a little bit of Inside-ish. It has this foreboding atmosphere to it, but it is chunky pixel art, so it also has that retro feel. On the first screen, your character jumps into frame and trips over, and you're playing what looks like a kid or a teen with a red cap and a backpack, and you are on the run. And if you do just stand around in that first screen, looking at the cityscape behind you, taking in the details, watching the clouds move, which looks really cool in pixel art, then you get killed pretty quickly. A big black spider-like robot comes in from the left. You get like a 2-second cutscene with a pixel art, and you are killed, and you start immediately again. It's like instant restart. And so you know the chase is on. And when you respawn in, you start running straight away. So there is some evasion, there is some die and retry, which isn't my favorite thing in the world, which I'll get to. But in this game, you run forward through a cityscape. It has a cool, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of feel to it. Like, you can see shadows of people through their drawn curtains and blinds, and they seem to have some wires going into their heads, and they are twitching. And so you are clearly on the run from this alien invasion. You see spacecrafts and smoking ruins in the background. And you just have to run and run. You have to find your way through obstacles, across balconies, up and down ladders. There are puzzles that involve rerouting power to elevators to get up and down, rerouting power to cranes and raising and lowering platforms. Crates, of course, because what game can't have crate-pushing puzzles? And you will die quite a lot in this game, I think. There are wild dogs, there are aliens, and there are falls, and there are slips. If you run across wet pavement, sometimes you'll get a little cutscene where you just fall and die. If you get caught by a dog, likewise. So lots of instant restart. Not my favorite thing. I like to be given the chance to succeed before I die. And in this game, you're very much meant to die, to learn what not to do, and then to not do it, which feels a little punitive to me always. Like, I like to at least have a chance. This game is a game that takes joy in killing you. It was the same with Limbo and Inside. So if you like those games, then maybe this is one for you. It's pretty cool, I think. It was very atmospheric, and I quite enjoyed the gameplay. Didn't get to the end of the demo. I had one too many die and retries, so I noped out of it. But I think that for Inside fans, and especially for Inside fans who have the Venn diagram of also liking crunchy pixel art and retro games, Full Void could be one to watch out for. I did also try to play Shadows of Doubt. This is the procedurally generated cityscape, first-person perspective, noir detective game with voxel graphics. So you're walking through a crunchy, grimy voxel city with rain, with neon lights, with crumbly old brick wall buildings. And you're trying to solve murders, and you do so by finding evidence, by taking photographs, by taking recordings, by printing out documents, or sneaking into offices at night and hacking into computers. And there seems to be a bit of a sandboxy immersive sim element to this one. Lots going on, lots of things that you can do, lots of experimental stuff, lots of emergent gameplay. Sadly for me, I mostly heard about all of this. I heard people talking about it on the NoClip podcast. David from the Discord played it and posted a couple of links of videos of gameplay. And Jeremy on the NoClip podcast particularly was very effusive in his enjoyment of the emergent gameplay in this one, the strange situations, climbing into rooms through air vents and realizing someone is asleep, having them wake up and chase you, having to run away, getting too cold and having to find heat. And so just this constant flow of emergent gameplay seems to be the order of the day. But for me, it took my computer about 5 minutes to generate the city at all. It was just lots and lots of loading screens. It started sounding like it was going to take off and turning into a space heater. So I think my poor little Mac couldn't run the Shadows of a Doubt demo, so I didn't get to play that one. It did load into the first room, but then neither WASD or the controller or mouse would make the character walk or the arrow keys. So I was just paralyzed. I was able to look around but not move. Very frustrating, but I don't think the game would have run well anyway. So I remain curious about Shadows of Doubt, but I'm going to have to wait for a Mac-optimized version. And last of all, this is the best of the bunch. This is a game that instantly went onto my to-buy list. Played flawlessly, bug-free, slick, connected to a controller, no problem. No notes whatsoever on the performance of this one. It is Nine Souls. This is a game that I heard about in our Discord again. I can't remember who talked about it. It might have been David of Dojima. This is a colourful, hand-drawn 2D platforming hack and slash that has a Sekiro influence. So it's based on parrying and evasion, but quite aggressively so. So parry to attack, press forward kind of stuff. It has lovely hand-drawn artwork in a really radiant colour palette that uses really unusual colours, like very specific types of maroon and like swampy ocean greens in the sky. It really caught my attention. It's lovely to look at. I really like the cartoony animation. It's got a sci-fi samurai kind of vibe, so a little bit of Hyperlight Drifter in there perhaps, things like that. But this is a side-scroller. You start off as a young cat who is a cat samurai, and in the opening cutscene, you are thrown down a cliff by losing a fight with some mysterious figure. The local tribal indigenous society finds you, and they rehabilitate you. They are humans. And it turns out pretty quickly that you know that there is more at play on this planet than meets the eye. You get a mysterious message from a seemingly like an AI operator who dials into you and says, it's time. Before you know it, you are in an underground base beneath the ground where there is a processing facility. Something very sinister is going on, and you have to battle your way through this processing facility to find out more and to take down this unknown evil that the game is setting up for you. The movement is nice in this game. You can jump, you can dodge dash, you can wall run up walls on marked surfaces. The combat is very, very snappy. It's very, very tough. I got shades of Hollow Knight with this harsh acclimatization process. If you parry and counter in this game, you hit L1 to parry, and then you can hold R1 and you will dash through your enemy with iframes. You will strike a cool pose at the end and then they will explode. So there is a very cool system that rewards parrying and countering and feels completely badass. You learn pretty quickly that you can dash through multiple enemies and make them all explode into meaty chunks like an intense cat samurai badass. It was quite hard. I did have to do a few die and retries, but I think once you get the hang of this combat, it is actually quite generous with, for example, the parry window. And I think that is really, really helpful. It's got a wide-feeling parry window. So I think that this is a game that you could get the hang of, even if it is initially difficult. There is currency. There is a skill tree. I got one skill point and was able to unlock more defense. I played the boss, really enjoyed the boss fight, got him on my third go. You just had to learn the patterns, learn what was not blockable, learn to evade and dodge through when he's going to turn and strike and that sort of thing, when the windows of opportunity are very, very, very Hollow Knight-like. But combined with the visual style, I guess they were trying to create gauntlets. You have three heals. You have Dark Souls-style save points where enemies respawn, but you get all your potions back. So that's the only note that I have for this one, really, is that the checkpointing could be a little more generous just to stop unnecessary repetition of areas. But other than that, Nine Souls is absolutely on my list for this year. I hope it comes out this year. I wish I could have got it on my fantasy critic team, but it has already been claimed. That was the best game that I played in Steam Next Fest. And I have to say, it felt so good to be in Steam Next Fest, just downloading demo after demo and dipping into all of these small experiences, to run through what I played again. Radio the Universe, High Water, Mika and the Witch's Mountain, Unmerk, Full Void, Shadows of Doubt, or at least I tried to, and Nine Souls. So if any of those sound fun to you, then do go and stick them on your wish list. We do have that Steam page now for Gaming in the Wild, and maybe I will chat to Dovetail about making a little list of games that we all in the community played in Steam Next Fest and recommend that you wishlist. That seems like a cool thing to do. So that was a fun and quite long intro to this podcast. It's time to move on to the featured review game of this episode, Birth. So Birth is a 2022 game by Madison Carr, a solo developer, published by Wings. It's going to be available for Mac and Windows. I first became aware of this one at the Day of the Devs presentation last year, and it really leapt out of the presentation. There were lots of good and interesting games in there, but this one was just very different. It has a very different visual style and a very different atmosphere, and it seemed very fresh and funny and personal and sad and interesting. I was just quite transfixed by it. As I'm speaking now, the Metacritic scores are not yet out for the game. I'm hoping that it's a good high score. I think maybe the kind of person that would want to review Birth is also the kind of person that might get it and like it. How Long to Beat doesn't have a rating either, but I played it in about 2 hours. And Madison describes it like this. Birth is an adventure puzzle game about constructing a creature from spare bones and organs found around the city in order to quell your loneliness. And there is another description as well that I really like that says, you are alone, you will build a creature, a partner, a wet warm heart, a collection of bones. And my take on this one is that it's a short, heartfelt point-and-click game in which we navigate a strange line-drawn city, interacting with the bony creatures and odd situations we find there. The puzzles involve playful physics, hidden objects, and pattern-matching mechanics that raise a smile and evoke the sadness, seriousness, and silliness of our fleeting lives. And Birth is a game where you don't control your protagonist, you never move around or like make someone walk from left to right. You're always looking in, I guess, what could be considered first-person-ish perspective. You're looking at a street, you click into a room, and then you're looking at the room, you click on the shelf, and then you're looking at the shelf. But there is a character creator at the start of the game. You can choose your character's complexion, you can choose your character's clothing, and you can personalize them to some degree. You can put on a nice little shirt and a little sweater, choose the color, decide if they have an earring or a nose ring or like a collar. And after you've done that, you see the room that you live in. There is a desk, there is a mirror where you can change your appearance if you want to. And on the desk, you can see that there are dotted lines where the parts of your companion that you are going to build will go. There is a dotted line that will contain a spine, a rib cage, a tooth, a femur, and some hands and feet. There is another tab, and you can see where the organs will go, so you'll have to also collect the wet parts, a heart, and some lungs and entrails. And you're going to walk around the city, and you're going to try and build this companion. And it might sound kind of gory when I'm talking about bones and organs and all of that kind of thing, but it's really not. It's very stylized. The line-drawn style is very crisp and illustrative, and all of the environments are kind of cleanly done and minimalistic to some degree. It has a very interesting color palette that contributes a lot to the mood of the piece. It's dry and dusty. There is lots of bone and paper and eggshell and all of these nice pale colors. So it's quite washed out in some ways, but I think that gives it actually a very distinctive look. It is desaturated, but it is I don't know. I think that relates to the theme somehow. I think anyone that has been through anything like anxiety or depression or like hard times might understand that the world can seem different. It can seem like the contrast has been pulled down and the saturation has been pulled down. And as this game does hinge around like a feeling of loneliness, the fact that this world is somewhat dry and seems somewhat lifeless, and that is represented in the colour and also the forms of the creatures that we meet, and the way that the city looks, it all coheres quite nicely into getting the central message across and powering that forward, I think. So after you've designed your character and you've had a look at the desk, you can look at the desk at any time by clicking on a backpack. There's a little icon at the bottom left of the screen. There is also a little cityscape at the bottom left-hand of the screen. You click on that cityscape and you step out into the street. You're looking at the fronts of buildings, all neatly arranged. You can scroll left and right. You can see that there is a store. You can see that there is a locked door with a combination to be let in. You can see that there is a cafe with some people in it that you can see through the window. And you can click on any of these places. There is also a locked gate at the end of the street, which you will have to finish this part of the street to unlock and move on to the next segment of the game. And you can go into the store, you can go into the cafe. In the store, the shopkeeper is standing there, this lifeless, empty-eyed skull with a big beak just looking at you, kind of not at all scary, but somewhat macabre, but in a way that kind of made me smile. And that's the vibe of this game generally. Like all of these bony, desiccated, dry, dead-seeming or rotting creatures that you will find and meet, they're not scary. They are kind of comical and they're kind of vulnerable, like the skin has been peeled back. And there is always this kind of tacit recognition of the fleetingness of life, that matter is impermanent and that lives are impermanent, and that seems to be embodied in the characters you meet and the art style of the game. And this shopkeeper is standing behind the counter and they are daydreaming about a sealed glass jar with some kind of potion inside of it. So you kind of know that you're going to have to put that potion together and give it to them, and you will get something in return. In the cafe, you can see various dispensers that you can dispense into cups in different sequences to make different kinds of drinks. So you pretty clock pretty soon that you're going to have to figure out what kind of drink someone wants and make that drink by uncovering the symbols that you need to make the right kind of drink. You can go into a stranger's apartment where there is someone lying under the duvet with the blankets pulled over their head, and only their little hand is sticking out the top. And if you click on the hand, it just waves you away. So you're standing in a stranger's apartment with them hiding under the sheets. And you can poke around in their room if you want to. So each of these rooms that you come into tells you a little bit about the world, and it gives you a little self-contained puzzle box. Within each room, there are elements that are subtly animated, so they draw the eye. You can hover over them and click on them, and you will zoom in to a little tableau. For example, in the stranger's apartment, you can zoom in on their dresser. There is a Polaroid. You can click on the Polaroid and zoom in on that, and you will see that the person in the Polaroid, the skeletal figure, is holding a bowl of stars. And you can click on those stars, pull them out of the bowl, and attach them to a little row of strings so that the five stars are hanging in a row. It's not really a puzzle. It's just like a little fleeting, interactive mini-game. And quite pleasing as such. And on another wall of that room, you'll find a jigsaw that you can piece together with different awkwardly shaped tiles and hexagonal shapes, and you have to slot them all together to finish the puzzle. It's not difficult again, but it is diverting. And then you'll get your reward. Maybe it's a key. You can use that to unlock a drawer where you'll find a bone. You put the bone into a cage, and then you'll get your reward, a little desiccated fish. It's that those kind of chains of events that you have to do. And after you've finished all of the puzzles in the room, you will have a handful of dead fish, which you can put into this tank. And then, you know, and then you get your final reward. The little chest in the tank will open and you will get like a tooth or a bone. That goes into your backpack, that goes onto your table, and you have found the first piece of the companion that you are trying to build. And there is something really pleasant about the pace at which the game moves along. These aren't puzzles that are designed to get you stuck and to really have you scratching your head. Most of them you will solve relatively quickly, like, you know, like a little puzzle that you might find in the newspaper, you will come across it. You'll walk into a new room. You will notice the different elements that you're supposed to interact with. And it is enjoyable just observing these rooms. It's enjoyable observing these little lives and observing these situations and prodding around in people's possessions. All of the games are different, which really, really helps. All of the games are fun. They rarely repeat. And so it's this, I guess if you were to boil it down, I haven't really thought about this way until now, but if you were to boil it down, it would be like 20, 30, 40 different little mini games, all of which are different, but all of which relate to this fantasy world that you are in. And as you are learning about the world, as you are encountering these sad creatures and looking at how they live, you're also fixing some of their problems. You are, I guess you're giving them what they want in some situations. Like if someone does want a drink that is made out of bat wings and teeth, you're fixing that little problem for them by making that drink and you're getting your reward. If the shopkeeper really does want the little jar full of potion that you have to whip up by doing different things around the shop, then you are giving them the potion that they want. So you are helping them out with their little desires, their little wants, their needs, their problems. And in reward, you are getting the pieces of the companion that you're trying to build. So I really enjoyed moving through this world, moving through these rooms, encountering these different creatures with their different concerns, and just poking around in all of their stuff. It's like a good game for being nosy and looking around inside this world. And I think a few things kind of helped it along, because it is minimal gameplay, but the clumsy physics is really good. So you can pick things up. Sometimes you have to pour like granules or little pebbles from one bottle into another container. And the way that you do this is that you hold down the mouse on the bottle that you're pouring from. As you move the mouse up, the little pebbles will tumble down and they will all get stuck and clogged. So you have to shake it a little. It's a little unwieldy and the stuff will kind of go everywhere. It makes you giggle. Like the precision is almost impossible. I mean, a few times I did get really intent on not spilling a drop and was very, very careful. But the first thing that happens when you pick up anything is that stuff goes everywhere. Like you will often have to clear a bookshelf, and every time you click on a book, it will fall off the shelf and it will tumble down. You can throw things around. It has this really funny physics. So that really helped with the general enjoyment of this minimalist gameplay. The visual style really helped with it too. It's so distinctive. It has an Edward Gorey vibe, the illustrator who made lots of quite gothic, slightly frightful, slightly funny, very charming children's books, I guess, but they are a little bit horror oriented as well. There's a similar aesthetic and a similar look here, but in a very different personal way. I love the line-drawn characters with their beaky noses, their twiggy horns, their little nose rings, and their tidy little outfits. I loved seeing them out for coffee, reading books. And I love the way that the city looks. As you are scrolling, there's a couple of parallax layers of city, and you get a glimpse down an alleyway sometimes, and you might see a little rat down there. If you click on it, something will happen. And you might look up to the rooftops and see a little bird sitting in a nest. Like, there's lots of little treasures to find everywhere. And in that way, it's really pleasant to look at this game. I like the color palette too, as I've described. The music is nice too. It's these kind of naive renditions of classical pieces. I knew that I recognized some of them. I actually interviewed Madison about this game, and that will be in next week's episode. And she did confirm that these are classical pieces. So if they ring a little bell at the back of your head, it's because you might have heard them before, but they are done here on a basic sounding kind of keyboard synth. So they're these naive versions. It's quite plain sounding, but has this funny little inexpertly played melodies too, which also has like a nice little mood to it. It's the slight clumsiness of this slightly highfalutin music. It does something cool. It has the vibe of sometimes like funeral parlor reception music or something. It can be quite funereal or strange hold music, like you're waiting for something to happen. So I think if you combine that with the palette, the look, and the physics, and the variety of the gameplay that you're doing, it's actually a really strong presentation. There's a lot to enjoy here. The fact that the runtime is, I think it was about 2 hours for me. So the fact that the game doesn't outstay its welcome is a big plus for me as well. I really, really enjoyed my time with this one. It's such an unusual game. It is so distinctly personal. It's a true solo developer project, and there is something to be said for that. There is a clarity of vision that comes through from something that was made solely by one person. And especially in the case of Birth, Madison just has a very clear style. And it comes through in all aspects of the game, the subject matter, the way things look, the way things sound, the way things play. It's like if you combine all of these personal elements together, you do get something quite individual, something quite unusual. I think this game also defies conventions that we might be used to. Like puzzles in point-and-click games are infamous for stumping you because you have to use the fish with the coffee machine and then give the fish coffee to the cat, which will then go down a rabbit hole and bring you a bell, which you then use to ring to open the door, the shop or whatever. And so point-and-clicks can be a little infamous for long-winded puzzles that are seemingly designed to extend playtime. That's not the case in Birth. Birth wants you to enjoy every moment of it, I think. It wants you to move through the game quite quickly and to receive what the game is trying to give you in a timely way. So you never feel held back. You never feel tied up or stuck, or like you're banging your head against the wall. There are a couple of multi-part puzzles in some rooms where you have to assemble a certain amount of things to trigger an event. But if you are ever feeling stuck in Birth, I say just sit back for a moment, look at the room again, see where you have not completed everything, and try it again. And the game doesn't try to hold you back. You will get through it quite quickly. It's a lovely little story. It's a lovely little journey. I really loved rifling through all the drawers and boxes. The tableaus and tabletops and shelves reminded me of the arrangements of found things I have on my own windowsills. From, like, if you go walking on the beach, you'll find like a seagull skull and a beautiful shell and a frond of seaweed. I'm always picking these things up and arranging them, and the whole game seems to have that kind of mood of an assemblage of found things, interesting little found things that you can search through. Lots of beautiful little boxes to unlock and to open and to find the treasures within. The pattern puzzles are really fun. They're all different, like you're trying to arrange stripes, but every time that you hit the button, all of the tiles flip, and so you have to get just the right sequence. I really enjoyed the little hexagon puzzles. They were like Sunday newspaper puzzles in a way, you know, when you're just sitting back on a Sunday with a cup of tea, looking at puzzles and getting them all done. It's a really fun way to spend an hour, and that's the kind of puzzles these are, I think, just intended to be diverting, intended to be entertaining. I really enjoyed going into the gallery and looking at the art, clicking on the paintings and ending up in another space entirely. There's a little bit of surrealism and dreaminess to this whole experience. It is a little like a dream, actually. I can imagine this being a dream, to wake up in this dried out world and to go tripping through it, looking at everything. I really enjoyed figuring out, you know, which tooth needs to be combined with which skull to make which disembodied fist unclench. I really enjoyed like opening a paper bouquet and casting all of the stems and flowers aside to get a combination that will let me into a new place. There's a really lovely little click, click, click of getting through the game, of cause and effect, of things that you have solved, letting you into new places. There are several rooms for you to get through, and there is a really nice finale at the end too that lands the game really nicely. I smiled a lot as I played this one. It's a real curio. It's a little gem, and I think that certain kind of people are just going to fall in love with this one. It's a really engaging little project, very personal, very tender. And when you take the whole thing together, it does seem to give you something you can feel. It gives you something about how it feels to be human, about some of the difficulties and some of the awkwardnesses, some of the hopefulness and sadness. It's got an awful lot folded into it. And I think that comes from just the attention that's been put into every detail. So it's a very detailed, lovely game that adds up to more than the sum of its parts. It's a beautiful little game. That's Birth. So I hope you enjoyed that review of Birth. The game is out today as I am posting this podcast on the 17th of February. It's on Steam. I'm not sure how much it's going to sell for, actually, but Madison's previous games have been pretty affordable. This one is a bit longer. There's more to it. There's more content here. But I really do recommend it. If you have a Steam Deck, maybe. Maybe it runs on the Steam Deck if you have a Windows machine or if you have a Mac computer. It's a great game to play with a mouse or a touchpad. I think it's primarily designed for that. So even if it does end up coming out on other things, I think that the computer and Steam might be the way to play it for the best experience. So do pick it up on your computer or your laptop or whatever you have available and give it a try. It's a wonderful little game. You can get through it in a couple of hours and just have a discreet, fun, curious little experience. I really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed it so much, in fact, that I did reach out to Madison, who designed this game, to talk to her about the game. We had a conversation, a great conversation about the game, a really fun, pleasant, warm conversation about this game that was very insightful in how it all came together and Madison's working process and how it is to be a solo developer bringing an indie game forward like this one. So I'm going to be posting that next week. So please do look forward to that as well. I will also mention I've been posting out some videos lately on my YouTube channel. The YouTube channel has been dormant for quite a while, but I reactivated it for the Games of the Year episode and edited together a little video. And since then, I've been editing together small cuts to go along with the podcast that have video footage that you can watch of the games that I'm talking about. So if you like to look at the game as you are listening to it, I know some people like to listen to this podcast on their commute or while they are doing something else in the house, and so audio fits best. So I'm going to continue posting both, of course. But if you are sitting down at a desk and working, you could put this visual representation of the podcast on your side screen and see the games that I'm talking about too. So if you do like to watch your podcasts, you can find my channel at youtube.com/gamingin the wild. I might do more with video this year. It's fun. It's like something new to try. It's a new skill to hone, editing and getting that right. And I always like to be trying something new. I really do appreciate if you subscribe to that channel, if you do any likes, if you share the videos on social media. The same goes for the podcast. If you do enjoy this podcast, you can support it in a bunch of ways. If you would like to, or show your appreciation. You can give it a star review on Spotify. You can give it a review on whatever service you're using if it allows for that. You can share it on social media. And you can join the Patreon if you'd like to come and join the Discord community and give a dollar or three or five a month to the show. I am going to be saving up for a Steam Deck this year with the Patreon money, so that's my new goal. If you would like to join in and chip into that, join our community and get bonus episodes, it's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next week with that interview episode with Madison Carr. Take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.